Grace, greetings, and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast for the 17th of December. I'm Paul White. I'm going to do something today that I've been wanting to do for quite some time. I love to write. I write, currently working on a series of manuals or study guides, books of sorts, commentaries of sorts on the book of Hebrews. I've written two books that have been published, and I always am trying to fashion myself as able to write, and to do that, you have to read a lot and you have to write a lot. Well, I've been writing some side things, and I've wanted to share some of those things. I've wanted to share essays of sorts. When you do that in a radio or a podcast style format, it's obvious that the person is reading. And so I wanted to tell you up front that that's what I'm going to do today. But what I am reading is something that I wrote. This is about a 1,300 word essay. No real title to it, but the subject is life and liberty as a gift from God. And so I want to read it. I'll just say grace and peace at the end, and we'll move on, and we'll see you tomorrow on the podcast. Life is promised to you as a gift from God. Jesus said that he came so that we might have life and have it more abundantly, John 10:10. This is a bit of a peculiar promise spoken to people who are actually alive, but we know that Jesus is promising more than just brain activity and heartbeats. He speaks to us on the other side of a warning in which he is the only door, and all attempts to enter the life of God are promoted by thieves and robbers. He even identifies those thieves and robbers not by pointing us to Satan, but to everyone who came before me, John 10:8. In the pantheon of prophets and lawgivers that filled the pages of the Old Testament before Jesus, he does not identify one person among them who are both lawgivers and life-givers. In fact, he throws them all under the bus. Not one of them has been able to show you, through their prophecies and their laws, how to live the abundant life of God. Only Jesus holds this key. The life that is given to us in God is a liberated life, one free from the restrictions and influences of outside forces. While in the natural, we must fight and press and risk life and limb to be a free people. No such force is necessary in the spiritual realm. Our liberty is not something doled out in stages, earned as we show ourselves capable of self-government. Our liberty is paid for in the sacrifice of Christ on the cross and guaranteed to manifest in us as we live our lives in him, with his divine influence directing and comforting us. The life found in Christ is automatically full of liberty. As Jesus declared, "He whom the Son has set free is free indeed," denoting that no other people on the earth know the liberty that is familiar to the sons of God. Liberty in Christ is automatic, but it is not automatically retained. We have access to it in limitless proportions, but we are warned by the Apostle Paul that there are forces in the world who are bent on robbing us of that liberty. To the Galatians, Paul urged them in Galatians 5:1 to stand fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and do not be entangled again with a yoke of bondage. I am fond of the NIV here, translated, "It is for freedom we have been set free," which shows that liberty is its own gift and nothing need be added. However, some of the urgency is lost in this translation, as the need to stand fast denotes an outside force working against our liberty, trying to rob us of the very thing for which Christ died. Paul warns the Galatians that entanglement with the trappings of law-keeping will estrange them from Christ, effectively cutting off the liberty he paid so dearly for them to enjoy. The yoke of bondage that they had slipped when they were born into Christ is waiting for them in natural Jerusalem, which Galatians 4:25 warns is in bondage with her children. The system of law-keeping promoted by Moses and the prophets had become a stumbling block to the righteousness of God and was now a yoke around the neck of God's people, choking out their life, their liberty, and their very pursuit of happiness. There is still a natural Jerusalem, though there is no longer a natural temple with actual animal sacrifices. Some people still hold that natural Jerusalem is in high regard, seeing it as the apex of Bible prophecy. Strangely, the prophetic fulfillment of a virgin birth or of Jesus' own prophecy that he would lay 3 days and three nights in the earth and then come forth as a resurrected man seemed to pale for many in comparison to verses regarding the restoration of Jerusalem. Paul seemed to have no such infatuation with either the city or the land, as his focus was on the freedom and liberty afforded by Christ in an entirely spiritual, invisible Jerusalem. To the Galatians of 2,000 years ago, and I suspect to the church of today, Paul warns, Hagar is from Sinai and she gives birth to bondage, and the Jerusalem that now stands represents such bondage, but the Jerusalem above is free, which is the mother of us all. Though we have no sacrificial system to return to, it hasn't slowed us in the least from creating a new system of sacrifices. We offer our time, our talent, our money, and our energy in service of the King. Families have been sacrificed on the altar of ministry, marriages lost to doing the will of God, and life itself generally choked out by a people whose sense of service and duty have been misplaced. Having forgotten, or perhaps having never been made aware, that we are sons and not servants, we press forward, exhausting ourselves so that at the end of the day, and especially at the end of our lives, we may say with confidence, I think I have finally done enough, or tragically, face our eternity and wonder in fear, did I do enough? Whatever we're doing, in whatever ministry, duty, or church with which we have aligned ourselves, our time, and our talents, the end result should not be fear and exhaustion, but rather an enhanced life. If what we are doing does not give life, we should no longer give our life for what we are doing. It is our liberty and our freedom to love life and see good days, and that to which we have put our hands in the kingdom should be producing life all around us. The landscape of Christianity is littered with the dried bones of saints who fell along the wayside, exhausted in their attempts to accomplish what Jesus has already finished on their behalf. Many run back to the world, content to suffer whatever they must, simply to be free from the tiresome load of Christianity. Thankfully, many prodigals have run to the Father's house, happy to be done with the hog slopping and fortune wasting, and they prepare for fatted calves and clean clothes. But how many more are still somewhere in between, not yet dead, but not yet exhausted? Just like the elder brother, they are still laboring in the fields, upset at a younger brother and his whore-supporting ways, and equally frustrated with a father that won't do anything about it. When confronted, that brother made no mention of his own liberty, nor of his inheritance. He simply focused on the supposed abuses of liberty on the part of his brother and the blatant lack of concern on the part of his father. And the father responded, Son, all that I ever had was yours. And he is saying that to us today. Liberty is in the Father, and all that he has is yours. Life is in the Father, and all of his life is available to you. Trade in your service for sonship, and don't spend another day dedicating yourself to things that rob you of life and peace. Benjamin Franklin walked out of Constitution Hall, and a man on the street asked him what they had accomplished. Franklin replied, "We have given you a republic, if you can keep it." Well, I say to you, it is for freedom you have been set free, but stand fast in the liberty. It is yours if you can keep it. Grace to you.